we won a big victory in Wayne County as well.
Politics, perhaps the stuff that Americans love and hate the most at the same time. To the many politicians and workers involved, election night can truly mean the thrill of victory or the agony of defeat. Politics means people, the people who are elected to serve and the people who are served. It means hundreds of campaign hours put in by candidates and campaign workers every day in every city of this country. It can mean the kiss on a baby's cheek or the cynical backroom politics of a big city boss. Politics is just that, politics. But politics is alive. And in today's program, we will look at a portrait of people who have lived and are living active lives in this profession. We will see politics grow up in Ann Arbor through the eyes of those who have grown with it. From the days of Kingsley and Maynard to our politicians and parties of today. Let's start at the beginning. What makes a boy and then a man interested in politics? We talked to Mr. Neil Stabler, a former congressman and state Democratic chairman, about his memories of politics and growing up in Ann Arbor.
It really goes back beyond that. My grandfather was in politics, was a township, he was a supervisor, a member of the county board of supervisors, but after he moved to Ann Arbor and was a local resident here, he was poor commissioner, and I can remember that some of my early experiences was quite harrowing for me. When he was away, and we lived right next door, he gave me the responsibility of responding to appeals for help. So vagrants would come and ask for a meal. And I had his book of tabs, which entitled people to a meal. And you know, it's quite a harrowing experience to decide whether you're going to be the answer to somebody's hunger. And I'm afraid I erred a little more on the side of public generosity than maybe wisdom warranted. But so I had some political connections. My mother was a co-chairman of the county committee back, I must say, in some of its weaker days. But she was a vehement person, and after Roosevelt came in and we had more to work with, she became a very active person in getting women organized. I've been subject to women's lib influences for a long, long time.
Mr. Stabler, a native son of Ann Arbor, has played a dominant part in establishing the Democratic Party in Michigan and in the nation. He still serves as a Democratic National Committeeman. He remembered an early encounter with William Jennings Bryan.
I can remember as a boy one of Bryan's visits, maybe his only visit to Ann Arbor, and standing on Main Street while the parade went by, and I think he ended up at the Whitney Theater and talked then. Of course, politics in those days, remember, was mostly personal. There was not much mechanical about it. No radio, no TV. So if you wanted to influence people, you had to talk to them directly. And politics, and consequently, had a scarcity value it doesn't have now. If you wanted to hear good oratory, you very likely had to listen to a politician. And Bryan was one of those. My early years, the orator of the country was Beveridge, who had been, I think, governor of Indiana, and who came to Ann Arbor a number of times. And I took time out to hear him, and I was impressed, as everybody else. Also, the small meeting was much more important than it is now. I think one of the sources of the malaise in politics is that the human flavor has gone out of politics. and that we need to reintroduce or increase in utility again the small meeting, the face-to-face encounter. There's nothing like it really in politics. Being talked at by a machine is not the same as having a chance to get face-to-face with somebody in politics.
Ann Arbor was a predominantly Republican town in the early 1900s. There still was a German faction, however, who were loyal to the Democratic Party, which Mr. Stabler supported. He remembered his early attempts to increase his party's following.
The only time, I guess, that Van Wagener ran for governor, and he had been a state highway commissioner, very popular highway commissioner. His local representative, Oswald Cook, K-O-C-H, enlisted me to help in the Van Wagener campaign. And we decided, or he decided, and I tagged along, that it would be good to conduct a model campaign out in the old German area, which was then the Second Ward, the southwest quadrant of Ann Arbor. And we staged a really classic campaign. We went to every house several times, and we distributed literature, and we really saturated the area. And figured that we would get back that old German Democratic vote. But we doubled the Democratic vote in the area, but we also doubled the Republican vote. So the margin was greater than ever. But it was one of the early lessons I picked up in politics.
That lesson was to be repeated often, and then taught to younger men during Mr. Stabler's successful career. I asked him about his early political experience with his father, a mayor of Ann Arbor, during the Depression years.
During his term of office, the Depression occurred, and that was a very trying time for everybody in public office because no level government was really prepared for handling welfare and relief on the scale that immediately became necessary. I remember that the city's total welfare appropriation was gone in maybe 2 months. And so the city was then concerned in what to do. All of us reached out in a lot of different directions. I got my father's consent to convene a study group on unemployment compensation. And we searched around to find people who knew something about it and got the two people in the country who were authorities. One was the treasurer of the Eastman Kodak Company, and another was a man by the name of Haber, who was then at MSC in those days. Who subsequently became professor and then Dean Haber here at the university. And we quickly discovered that unemployment compensation had to be operated on a much wider scale than simply a municipality. But people were thinking very fast in those days, trying desperately to find answers to the economic problems that confronted the country. My father then ran at the end of his two terms for state representative in the Democratic ticket. I was campaign manager, and I think I was responsible for his defeat. Almost every Democrat was winning those days, though in Ann Arbor this was not necessarily the case. This remained rather staunchly Republican. But I developed a very elaborate campaign booklet in which we put in his ideas, and I'm afraid too many of mine, on of what ought to be done at the state level. and I probably had in it all the reforms and changes that were made in the next 20 years. But anyway, it frightened people in the community, and he lost by several hundred votes. But I always thought that if we'd done nothing at all, he'd probably have been swept in. This was overkill in my youthful enthusiasm. But the university remained rather staunchly Republican for quite a while. I remember that when I was a student, 22 to 26, there were only a few Democrats in the faculty. In fact, a Democrat on the faculty was something of an anomaly. They weren't quite regarded as sound people. And in fact, it was the state of mind of the whole state. If you were proper thinking and responsible, you were a Republican. Only Democrats were vagrants and bartenders and ne'er-do-wells and or freaks. And there were a few of these freaks in the faculty. But all the right-thinking people knew that you had to tolerate them, but you didn't really take them very seriously.
Portrait of the growth and experience of Mr. Neil Stabler, a politician important in Ann Arbor's state and civic history. Ann Arbor itself grew dynamically in the 20th century. Specifically, a new city hall, new election laws, and a new city charter were needed to make the city government more alive and responsive to the people, making participatory government more of a reality. In Portrait of the Political Growth of Ann Arbor, we will talk to three citizens representing different aspects of the city's development during this time. First, Mr. Fred Looker, involved in the city government since the 1920s. Mr. Looker was city clerk from 1951 through 1965. He reminisced about Ann Arbor's first electric voting machines.
I remember the first time the voting machines were used. I went down to the polling place at the Armory, the Fourth Ward, and I could see a pair of feet in under the curtains there, and I could hear a machine being run. And I said, what goes on there? And I won't mention the name. Oh, he says, Mr. So-and-so was just seeing how the machines run, he said. I said, well, what are you going to do with all the votes he's cast on there? Oh, we never thought of that. So we had to avoid the votes that were on that one machine for that day. But he got his practice in anyway.
Mr. A.D. Moore was a councilman for the longest continuous time of any councilman, 17 years from 1940 to 1957. I asked him what politics was like when he first came to Ann Arbor. Unfortunately, due to technical problems, you will only hear the audio portion of this interview.
Well, it was pretty tame. It is, you might say, old-fashioned. The city was small. The university had about 10,000 people, 10,000 enrolled, as I remember it. And the butcher and the baker and the harness maker, any one of them could be elected mayor. Things ran along. They ran along all right, I guess. I don't think there ever was a major scandal in this government. Never in my 17 years was there ever any hint of a council member being approached in a shoddy way. And I have no reason to think that anyone ever was. But on back of that, I can't say I was not in the government. But I read the papers, and I can't remember any scandal. It's been a good town.
Highly involved in both council and police activities, I asked Mr. Moore whether today's popular criticisms of government bothered him, especially the trend of many young people to avoid politics altogether.
If you turn off politics, well, in essence, you are resigning from the human race. What could replace it?
And you feel that, that's right, but you feel that the systems can be corrected so that...
It has to be, yes, yes, indeed.
And that calls for some very bright and committed leadership.
It calls for yielding, it calls for compromise.
Well, we began by talking about what got you interested in the field of politics along with your engineering and teaching vocation. May I ask, as you look back, what genuine personal satisfactions you have derived from your experience in city government?
Oh, a very great deal. I wouldn't have missed it for the world. And it means, of course, living two lives at once and doing two jobs at once, full-time at the university and... It should be full-time downtown, and yet you simply have to do the best you can on both sides of the fence there. So I had a very, very rewarding experience. I wouldn't have missed it for the world. I had the opportunity to bring voting machines to Ann Arbor. I'm the one who led that parade. After staying up till 7 o'clock in the morning one night counting ballots, paper ballots, I decided that this wouldn't happen anymore. And I was the main influence in bringing parking meters here over some dead bodies.
What was the objection to parking meters?
There's always objection to parking meter. Merchants say on Main Street or whatnot think that it'll drive people away, and it doesn't work that way, but they try them and they're convinced. And let me say this, that without parking meters, there would have been no parking structures, because... Well, it's a little bit like a dare between two boys, and let's say I'm the bigger boy, and I say, you got a reputation before you come around and challenge me, you know. Well, the city has to get a reputation in order to get a parking structure. And by putting in parking meters and getting an income that's established on a certain level, then you can go to your bonding people and say, here, will you sell our bonds? And they did, and then... That means more income, and that means another parking structure. That's how we got so well off. The outstanding thing that happened during my years in the council was adopting a new city charter.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And new city charters often do not get passed the first time they are presented to the electorate. Mm-hmm. But we had a good charter commission. They brought in a good new charter. There were good arguments for it. Even that isn't enough often. But I might say that I'm a Republican, but the Democrats also trusted me. And I stood back of the new charter, and I think that that was a major influence in getting it through on the first vote.
Mrs. Nan Sparrow was an active member of the City Charter Commission of the new charter adopted in 1955. She first discussed the problems of city government before the new charter, and then her efforts at organizing for charter revision.
The main points were that the charter was all right for the 19th century and early 20th century, but it was not usable, really, not as usable for the mid-20s, I mean the mid-20th century, and particularly for the burgeoning community here. Ann Arbor was expanding at a great rate. Oh, they had an old idea, old system of running the city by volunteer boards and commissions, which was fine. It involved a number of fine citizens, but at the same time it divided the authority. Some of those commissions, for instance, would have charge of the business of certain departments. And this was time-consuming because, actually, it wasn't centralized. There was no centralized purchasing, no centralized budgeting, no centralized system of hiring personnel at the time. Each department did their own. It was a much more efficient city government. 1940, two attempts had been made. Actually, the revised charters had been submitted to the electorate, and they had been turned down. So by 1940, the League of Women Voters nationally became very much interested in improved local government, and particularly in studying the manager, city manager form of government, it seemed to be better adapted to modern times. And the local unit here went right along with it. And so we got busy on it and had a committee to study the needs. We got together with other groups in town, the Junior Chamber of Commerce, the Democratic Party, some very fine liberal Republicans, and other concerned citizens. We got started studying, and we even got as far as putting out petitions for charter change. When all of a sudden it came to us that the city wasn't ready for it. We kept hearing grumbles from the conservative business group downtown that this was radical and we didn't need it and that sort of thing. And then we took a poll of the members of council at the time and found that the majority of the council members were against it, including the mayor. So we did a quick retake and said, perhaps this is not the time. And we had a committee, it was called the Charter It's the Citizens Committee for Charter Revision. So we said, well, we won't do it right now, but we'll go underground. And we'll try to get a majority on the council and let the council take the responsibility for studying a new charter and putting it on the ballot. So we persuaded all four or five of our own members to run for the council. And we were successful. And before you knew it, we had a majority on the council.
Portrait of the growth of Ann Arbor through the eyes of three active citizens. Finally, we must look at the profile of politics and government in the city today. When I asked Miss Letty Whitcliffe about the history of Ann Arbor politics, she simply replied she was too busy making history in the present. A candidate for county commissioner in the past year, Miss Whitcliffe speaks as a black and as a woman. But most importantly, she speaks of the unity and strength needed in dealing with the problems of city government.
Office. And so that would be a form of discrimination, certainly. It's just been recently that a large number of blacks hold offices on all levels, city and state and national. And they're just getting more and more involved in politics, which they should, because that's the only way that one can really know what's going on. If you're not involved, you don't know what's going on. And that's true of all people. There are many whites who are not involved in politics, and they don't know the issues, and they're not particularly interested because they're getting along all right. It's only when people who are not getting along, who have a problem, that they really want to become involved and try to change things. As I was talking about the young people want to be involved, but my experience with them is that they don't have the background. It's not that they can't get the background, but they're so sure that their youth and their native intelligence will carry them through, and it takes more than that. You find the statesmen who were really outstanding and who contributed to the development of any country, not only ours, were people who not only had intelligence, but they had experience with it. And that's what I feel that young people need. And we do need young people. We need young blacks, and we need young whites. We need the other races too involved. As long as we concentrate on race, we're not going to get very far. Because then what you do is divide people. Divide people because of race, or divide people because of religion, anything like that. And people who want to divide people do it because of the power that they have of control. And poor people have always been handled that way. They're handled that way now. If you can put one person against the other person, then they don't have the strength of unity. And this is one of the problems. And the minority groups, regardless of what group it is, they're waking up now. And they're beginning to realize this thing. And there's going to have to be a change. Somebody thinks, many people think, well, we'll just live along and get along all right and with what has happened in the past. But they should see now that that's not true, if we're not going to do that. There has to be a change.
On the night of November 5th this year, Republican Marvin Esch was re-elected to the United States Congress. Election night is something which belongs to the victor, just as hope for the next campaign belongs to the candidates who will run again. So it is the full circle, portrait of the growth of a politician, the growth of a city government, and the active growth of citizen participation in the present and the future. Politics is politics. As Americans, we will probably always hate and love politics at the same time. I guess I remember when being a politician was something to be proud of. And the people we talk to today are people we can be proud of. We can be proud of our government in the future if we take it in our hands.
For us, the family, and for all of you who work so hard, we've been very proud to our family to represent you in Washington during the past 8 years, and we look forward to that challenge in the next two. But the mood of the country is different this year. It's different, I think, because of the tragedy that all of us have had in the past 2 years. And that's why we wanted to go out on a people-to-people campaign to reach out to the voters and to tell them that our system still works and that we should have faith in our system. And the hundreds of volunteers that we've had this year, and the great work that I've had from my family, even to the point where my wife wore out her shoes. She's got her bare feet on. The great support that we've had from my family and from you testifies to the fact that we still believe in this system of government that we have.